Luke, I am your father. Search your feelings, you know it to be true. I am wearing all black, but okay, here we go. Wow, it's like a certain vertigo effect to this. Yeah, the toenails are black. And sparkly, too. So, how's everybody doing? Everything's normal. The world's normal. We wear normal things. So, today is actually my 49th birthday. My best friend besides Loretta, Mike, he turns 50 on the 12th. The world's a little different. We went and got the vaccine recently, the Moderna, the first one. We haven't gotten the second one yet. Not that I believe the whole thing completely, but I'm also not a conspiracy theorist. And it's like, is it really that hard to just wear a mask so that you don't infect other people? How is that an invasion of your liberty? But anyway, yeah, I've got like a odd side effect that I got that manifested. Like I got the shot in my left arm, like up here, but like here. Well, some places they call it a tattoo, but actually she got me a tattoo for my birthday yesterday, my first one. And I wasn't having problems with it until like 10 minutes ago. And now it's like itching like crazy, but don't worry. I'm not going to be pulling my tattoo out or anything. Yeah. So the good thing about sitting is this is going to keep me from going too far out on a limb, nice and still. I think it'll add an interesting quality to the toning. Ooh. It's kind of neat. So everything that Bill had said about me, I don't want to say it's not true, but it was pretty nice. Thank you. I want to get you thinking about prayer in a really thinking and more importantly, feeling about prayer in a different way. Today, we tend to think of prayer as like this process where we're sort of, you know, really coming from Judaism, from the Hebraic standpoint, a process that's set apart, something that's kind of removed from everyday life. And over here, there's something that we call a holy process, a sacred process, et cetera, whatever. But is that Doug with the freaky mask? So that's who has the freaky mask. I'm like, I didn't actually turn around to see what the mask was. And now I see it. And I'm like, that does kind of mess with you a little bit. anyway, that's awesome. It's a little disturbing actually, but it's no, but in a fun way, it keeps everything fun. Anyway, but we have this idea that prayer is that kind of thing that we set aside. Like we've got the everyday life, we do our thing. And then when stuff hits the fan, so to speak, paraphrasing, we have this set apart thing that we do called prayer. And hopefully I can sort of spin the idea of that a little bit today. And of course I'll start with what I love to start with, which is prayer and toning. And last time I was here was in September, and I didn't come back. I kind of just snorted. I can hear it louder in here because I get to hear it twice. So I heard like that, but I only snorted once. I was toning and I had the face mask on and I kind of almost hyperventilated. Nobody could see it. My eyes were rolling back in my head. And I was like, I'm sorry, but if I have to wear the mask, I'm not going to do it. So this was the alternative. This is cool though. I like this. I won't be adopting this, you know, anywhere else per se, but I'm going to begin with prayer. And I'm going to, normally I say, you know, let's all do this together, which we can, you can join in. But what I definitely want to do is move through, I think my favorite tone poem of sorts is the Aramaic Lord's Prayer. And we are literally conscious beings of nested frequencies. And for me, the Aramaic Lord's Prayer, the Aramaic Our Father, awakens almost like the grid work of our sort of nested frequency spectrums in a way that very few other things do. And I do a little bit of toning with that sound when I made the sound, that's toning. Intonation would be the proper terminology, but it, really all it is just elongating usually vowel sounds, because it's a little hard to elongate consonants. Some you could, but D, like how do you make a long D sound? It doesn't sound good, so that doesn't work. So we do the vowels more often. You can do but what I'm going to do is I'm going to begin by first toning the first word of the Aramaic Lord's Prayer, that when spoken, if you're more in the West, it's kind of like avun or avunach to bishmo yitkaras yismaks. But if you go more toward the East, which is more of the toning that I offer, is more like awun or awun. So I'm going to tone one time to give you an idea of what toning sounds like, although most of you have been in the room with me doing this before. I'm going to make the awun sound once, and I'll say it's not really about a magic pitch. Everybody's pitch is going to be different. Smaller people with higher voices, or people that just have higher voices, are going to have a higher, what I would call resonant frequency that lights you up. And it's going to change throughout the day. It'll be a little lower in the morning because you just woke up, and it gets a little bit higher closer to the evening. Although my pitch didn't change, you know, the resonance of my voice did. So I'm going to make the awun sound. I'm going to do it three times and then go into the prayer. I was going to play the bowl, but I think maybe I'll either do that at the end or not do that at all. I just want to keep this more of an energy body process, okay? So to begin, I'd like you to, with me, take three deep breaths. We're going to breathe in through our nose. Hold that in the body temple just a few moments, and then out through your mouth. Full exhale and release. Let's do that one more time. Hold it just a few moments in the body temple, and then one final time, in through the nose. Hold that just a few moments, and then out. Now you can offer this sound along with me. I'm going to do it three times, or you can just be in the moment and allow the frequencies to, in the words of the Lakota, to let the wind blow through you. Almost like you're just that open vessel, and just allow it to resonate within your being, your energy body. So I'm going to do three tones and then move into the prayer. Vyana Kaikana Dvashmiya Ap Beharaya Hablan Lachmadasun Kananyomana Washpuklan Chaubin Chtahin Aikana Dap Honan Shwakan Lachayavin Vila Tach Lan La Nazione. E la Pazan Minbisha. Metul di Delaki Malkuthak. Wahila Watishbukta. La Ilam. Almin. In English, our one absolute eternal being, of which we are born forth from the realm of the all and the only. I am empty. Within the ecstasy of pure presence and the purity of the vibration of the divine name. Empower my creative expansion through your emergence from the unseen realms as I realize our life force and will as one on the manifest earth as in the unseen heavenly realms. Provide the nourishment of clear insight and realization through me now and in each present moment. Release the echoes of my hidden past as I cancel all of my concerns with others. Do not let me lose my true self in forgetfulness, but wholly release me from the errors of my perceptions. For the undivided holiness is the absolute, the all, and the only, the brilliant grace, glory, magnificence of the universal light. Forever and ever, La'alam almin, aeon to aeon, gathering to gathering, moment to moment, from now to now. May these pure intentions be the rooted, fertile earth center from which all my actions flow. Now we're going to tone one word, one time, wide open. Rather than abwoon, sounds like this. Amen, amen, amen. One time, wide open, and then back to silence, okay? Get a big breath. As much as you're able to, continue to be aware of the rise and the fall of your breathing. That's what spirit really means. The word spiritus, the Latin, and then the Greek pneuma, but really it's about the Aramaic rucha. That means literally rucha, spirit. It kind of means this. It means frequency. It means vibration. So what would be a more tactile translation of the word spirit would actually be breath. Heartbeat's an example. The movement of air on your skin, magnetism, electricity, the feeling from the heat of the sun, those are all. So when we hear about being in spirit, what it's really saying is just being aware of all the sounds, the vibrations, the frequencies within and around you. Because again, we are literally conscious beings of nested frequencies. So today we're here, we're talking about prayer. What exactly does prayer mean? Anybody have any input on that? What does prayer mean to you? There's no right or wrong answers here. And you can either, you know, answer it in a theological way or in like a big wide open new agey new thought sort of whatever it is that comes to mind for you. What does prayer mean to you? What's that? Gratitude. Beautiful piece of insight there is the word gratitude in Aramaic, tebuta or eucharista in Greek. They're the same word. It's the same word as grace. So we tend to think of grace as this sort of grace is bestowed upon the lowly heart. In some ways, you have to be beaten down and like, you know, sort of almost like ground into the dirt by life before grace is bestowed upon you. But in truth, being the same word, it's not that grace is bestowed upon the lowly beaten down heart, but that grace is awakened by a grateful heart. And that's really what that, it's a big piece of essence that for some reason Christianity doesn't teach. And it's there in the Greek, so it's not like they haven't learned it. It's just for some reason they haven't realized the significance of that. Anybody else insights on prayer? Like what does prayer mean? What does it mean to pray? Yeah, huge. And I'll say that funny enough, that's really one of the huge central pillars of it. You know, as an example, people will go and they'll yak on endlessly about the law of attraction. And they'll say, yes, I'm manifesting a car. I'm attracting a car. And I'm like, okay, well, if you're attracting a car, what's obvious to you? Funny, the word manifest comes from the Latin manus, which means hand, festus, which means obvious. It means as obvious literally as my own hand. So manifest means to make obvious. So in other words, if someone's saying, okay, I'm manifesting a car or I'm attracting a car, what's actually obvious to them? They don't have a car. So as soon as you even use the language of using the word attract, you're manifesting that which you do not have. So be careful with the words that you use. And again, you don't get what you want. You don't get what you're beckoning for or requesting. You get who you are. And if you're beckoning for something that you have an imbalance, you feel imbalanced because you don't have it. So now you need to get it. What you're going to get is more of the imbalance rather than. And of course, if you don't get it, what do they call it? Unanswered prayers, which is a great song from Garth Brooks. But there's no such thing as an unanswered prayer. I'm sorry. You don't get, and I'll say this too, Matthew 21, verses 21 and 22, the two most powerful statements, sets of sentences ever about manifestation in all of anything I've ever read in human creation and in Christianity, it's completely neutered. It's all about belief and all these other things. But what he actually says there is that you're not going to get what you're asking for. You're going to get what's obvious to you, essentially. And of course, if you're beckoning for something that needs to be filled, whatever, that's what you get. So I want to add a little here. This is from, a lot of people know him, a dear mentor of mine, dear friend, Dr. John Waterhouse. And I've actually said this quote before. It's in my book, which is back on the table there, Echoes of an Ancient Dream. But this is from John's book, Five Steps to Freedom, which is all about affirmative prayer, conscious prayer in the Ernest Holmes tradition, science of mind, religious science. He says, God is not an observer in our lives. God is the consciousness of our lives. As we begin to more fully comprehend the constant and abiding presence of divine spirit, we find ourselves entertaining the notion that our every utterance, our every thought, and everything we express into life is a calling out to God. Every time we curse, we are praying. Every time we are angry, we are praying. Every time someone tells a joke or laughs or lies or cries, what is happening is prayer. Our judgments are prayers. Our fears and phobias are prayers. Spirit is present in the midst of it all. Everything we think, say, and do is a prayer, and every bit of it is having a direct and significant effect on our lives. Has anybody ever seen the movie Monsters, Inc.? With Sully, the Sulster, which John Goodman, he's like a big blue monster. And Mike Wazowski with one eyeball, which is Billy Crystal. And it's a hilarious movie, but it's about monster, the monster world that lives in children's, you know, on the other side of children's closets. It only comes out at nights. And of course it scares them so that, and they use the fear of human children to power the monster world. And then of course they go through the entire movie and realize by the end that human happiness and joy is 10 times more efficient, more powerful. But it's great because there's a little girl, Boo, this little human girl. And like Mike Wazowski kind of freaks her out a little bit and she just goes nuts. And she starts screeching. Our little Shemaya, who's been here many times, she's not little anymore. She's about to turn, what, 10? But her, she's got that squeal that, like, I wrote this book probably about 90% of this was written in the front window of a place called West End Bakery in West Asheville, like a few blocks from where we live. And the owners were good friends of ours. But when Maya would come into West End, there was this one kid that used to work there, Elliot. He would put his fingers in his ears like this, which meant to Maya, okay, it's time to scream. And she would go, and then all the other employees would put their fingers in their ears and she would let out this screech that was like mini Ripperton meeks, you know, I don't know what. It was just, it was intense. It was up there. And it would be funny because, of course, people would go to the owners and say, can you please stop that little girl from screeching? And Lewis, the owner, would walk over to me and, Dale, people are complaining about Maya. I just wanted to let you know that, you know, I told them I'd talk to you about it. I'm like, okay. And then 20 seconds later, she's going, screeching. But anyway, when Boo does it, it's like her energy body just goes wide open. And all of a sudden, the lights start surging and light bulbs are bursting. And the entire town, everything surges. All the lights get really powerful. And then, everything goes black because of the power of one little human girl's squeal or scream. Well, really, in essence, that's kind of what prayer is. It's not necessarily what you're asking for, but what you're beckoning for, but what your overall overriding body temple, you could say frequency pattern, is exemplifying or resonating, regardless of what your words are saying. And we all know the experience of saying one thing and feeling something else. Funny that the word in Aramaic, tslu or tsluta, prayer, it means to entrare, entrare. It sounds French, doesn't it? Ensnare, I was saying entrap and ensnare, and I wasn't sure which word to use because they both apply. So I said entrare. It just sounds very French. But to ensnare, or that's going to lock in my brain. And every time I try to say one of those in the future, to either ensnare or to almost like entrap, to set a trap for God. Now, not like, ooh, you know, that kind of thing, but more like an antenna, that you have an antenna that you stick out. And of course, if you're not in the right frequency, you're not going to get a particular TV station, radio, whatever, et cetera. But this is a little deeper than that, meaning the overall frequency pattern of the body. And it's funny because anybody ever study holograms? Holograms. There's a great book, I'll say, if you haven't read it yet, it's called The Holographic Universe from a man that I adored. He was a really amazing soul, passed from a really rare form of leukemia in the late 90s, but his name was Michael Talbot. Michael was just an amazing guy, but he wrote a book called The Holographic Universe, and he talked about how in the quality of a hologram, it has two primary characteristics. It's that it's two different frequency patterns coming into play and they essentially lock in. They're out of focus and it requires a true laser to lock one back into focus. And you get like, if I started out doing Darth Vader right in the beginning of, is it the first Star Wars, where R2-D2 like throws out this little hologram and Princess Leia's, you know, it's like, oh, help me. Oh no, it was Obi-Wan. Like, help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope. It was actually Princess Leia, and R2 had kind of sent the message out. Well, everybody's seen like the little cheap hologram things, which are just sort of like little 3D toys, essentially. But science now says that everything that we see is a hologram. And the hologram is created by the relationship between, let me put it this way, and this is from George Dole, president or professor of theology at the Swedenborg School of Religion, who also just happens to hold degrees from Yale, Oxford, and Harvard. That's all. So he's not smart in any way. He notes that one of the most basic tenets of Emanuel Swedenborg's thinking, Swedenborg was almost like a scientist / philosopher. And he was this gorgeous, this is back in the, 17th century? This amazing balance between science and spirituality, which is not an easy sort of line to really stay in balance with. But in Swedenborg's thinking, he said that our universe is constantly created and sustained by two wave-like flows, one from heaven and one coming from our own soul or spirit. He says, if we put these images together, the resemblance to the hologram is striking. I want to pause for a second and say, you know, if you have a camera, a digital camera, or even a regular camera, and you take a photograph, and the photograph is blurry, you actually can later on with software focus the photo and actually bring the different layers of what was recorded on your from your sensor onto the film or onto the digital media and refocus it later, which is essentially what a hologram is. You look at fuzz in space, and then when you bring your attention to it, it all collapses. There's science that says that what's behind me doesn't exist. I know this sounds odd. I'm going, now it might exist for you because you're looking at it. But what is to say that you actually exist anyway, or I exist? And it's essentially like where, you know, in the words of Yogananda, he talks about transferring the sense of identity from the pseudo soul or ego back to the true inherent nature of our divinity and to become the ever-joyous witness of a stupendous cosmic drama. Realizing that we're watching a movie on the screen that Jesus called Mamuna, Mammon, which didn't mean money, it meant materiality. It meant the belief that this is somehow real, when science and spirituality, philosophy all say that this is simply a play that we're in. This is some kind of a mind trip, a matrix, a hologram. So if we put these images together of that coming from the eternal or from heaven and that from our own soul or spirit, the resemblance to the hologram is striking. We are constituted by the intersection of two flows, one from the direct, from the divine, and one indirect from the divine via our environment, our own soul. We can view ourselves as interference patterns because the inflow is a wave phenomenon and we are where the waves meet. And this is the essence of a hologram. Now, the question I want to ask is, going back to the idea of obvious, if we're the part of two, how many chimes are there? If you can see that from that far. If I was in the back, I wouldn't be able to see it. Two. So if we are looking at the idea of a hologram being a relationship between two different waveforms, I'm going to play you something here. Let's say that's the eternal. Hear it? Now, let's say this is the waveform coming from our own soul or spirit. It's pretty much the same, isn't it? It's pretty close, but let's play them together at the same time. Ooh, that was interesting. Neat little, ooh, the face shield kind of freaked me out. What was that? All right. Sorry, I got to do it on purpose. Okay, I'm done now. I'm done playing. You hear something happening there? So that third voice is our life. That third voice is essentially, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's our prayer. That is what. Now, of course, think about this. Why would, where's the third voice coming from? Why is there that little wobble? Can you listen really close to these pitches? They're not exactly in tune, are they? The second one's a little lower. Interesting. So where does that third voice come from? The third voice comes from us not being in exact tune with the universe, with the divine, etc. That third voice. And of course, the more out of tune we are with the eternal, the more intense our beat, what's it's called in science, a beat frequency. The more intense our beat frequency becomes. And the way Yogananda actually talked about it was, there's the cosmic vibration, there's that eternal essential frequency pattern that's happening, and then there's our own. And when we are out of congruence, out of alignment, out of harmony with the eternal, the more out of harmony we become, the more those two wavelengths go out of focus with each other, the more intense our beat frequency gets. And the more you start getting beaten down in life, and the more it feels like you pray for something, but it's not manifesting. Kind of like driving a car at 70 miles an hour with a bad tire. It's not a pleasant feeling, is it? You get just a little bit annoyed after a while when you, and of course, you know, I think it's even amplified if it's a man driving the car and the woman is in the passenger seat. I think it amplifies for whoever's in the passenger seat versus the person driving. Because the person driving, when you're driving your life, you tend to tune certain things out, incongruencies, lack of harmony. And we have this natural tendency to bring things back into harmony and even butter things up, sugarcoat things, and not be honest about the fact that our life is going boop. And then somebody else comes and look at your life and they're like, you don't notice that? Notice what? You don't notice that boop from the car? No, I don't notice anything. Your brain has self-adjusted itself. It doesn't realize that you're going around, and everybody knows that person that's just not self-aware. Bless their heart. We love them with all our hearts and souls. Bless their hearts. It's the Southern way of saying it. I'm from New Jersey. We have different ways of saying it, but I can't use those hand gestures in the moment. So, well, I can, but that, and it's, you know, I got to say, that's what amazed me about moving to the South, because I'm from New Jersey. Loretta's from Florida. And when we first came up here, it was 1998 for our wedding anniversary, or excuse me, our honeymoon. And we're driving. I remember we were on 64 driving toward Bat Cave and Chimney Rock Park and Lake Lore and all that. And these people are on the side of the road going like that. And I'm like, what are they doing? She's like, I don't know. And then we keep going around more curves. There's people on the side of the road going like this. It's like, what are they doing? I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. And then finally she's like, maybe they're waving at us. And I'm like, why would they be waving at us? She's like, I don't know. You know, she's from Florida. I'm from Jersey. The thing that got me was just, they used their whole hand here to wave to you. In New Jersey and Florida, they just use one finger. So I won't demonstrate it for you, but I know you all know what I'm talking about when I say self-adjust, but that it was so perfect what you said, and I'm glad that nobody else answered it, because you would have messed up the talk. But we had a deal before we start. I'm just kidding. No, but it was so perfect, because really that idea of that sort of somehow beckoning something out there, when you're asking for something to be filled, realize that regardless of what you're intentions are, at least on some conscious level, that's not really the prayer. The prayer is what's obvious to you. And if we can get ourselves into that place of gratitude for what is, gratitude for what's beautiful, gratitude for what is in harmony, more comes into harmony, because the grace is shed, the grace is awakened through the grateful heart. And that's something really big. That's how we come into tune with that eternal voice. It's how we come into tune with God and the universe and all these great little names that we have for it. So rather than going in with some kind of requests, which is an affirmation of lack and imbalance, going in just simply open and awake with the heart wide open in gratitude. And I'd like to close this with a really beautiful quote from Khalil Gibran. And it's funny because, you know, people would probably expect that me being like the Jesus man, not because of my hair, that I'm California surfer Jesus, although my hair wouldn't be blonde enough. But, you know, people get surprised because I'm like, actually my most quoted book, if somebody is born or dies or marriage, some kind of big life transition, paradigm shift, usually it's the prophet from Gibran that I quote, not the Bible. So I'm going to give you this. This is from the prophet. And I'll say that he had like four dozen books, and I owned all of them at one point in my life, and none of them could touch the prophet. It was the one book he kept coming back to, kept coming back to. Yeah, powerful. But this is from the section on prayer. Get a big breath right now. He says, what is prayer but the expansion of yourself into the living ether? And if it is for your comfort to pour your darkness into space, it is also your delight to pour forth from the dawning of your heart. When you pray, you rise to meet in the air those who are praying at that very hour, and whom, save in prayer, you may not meet. Therefore, let your visit to that temple invisible be naught but for ecstasy and sweet communion. I cannot teach you how to pray in words. God listens not to your words, save when he himself utters them through your lips. In other words, rather than this sort of, you know, I can almost say like a new age, and I'm just going to be blunt about it, spiritual avarice idea that some, and yeah, you can have everything, but when you realize you are everything, that huge list of all the things that you need to add on to prove your spiritual power, somehow it keeps getting shorter and shorter and shorter, because when you are in tune with the divine, lack doesn't exist. There's no imbalance. The harmony, you become so ultra sensitive, so ultra awake and aware to your life, which is spirit itself, that it's just that harmony that becomes the overriding desire, is just to stay in harmony. And of course, I think we all occasionally like to go out of harmony a little. Maybe it's New Year's Eve or something like that, when the tire's gone, it's like, shut up, just give me one night for God's sake. I don't have to be in harmony all the time. And that's perfectly human and natural. But what I'm saying is, when we allow ourselves to just be aware of the rise and fall of the breath and the gratitude for each, and I say this as everybody's wearing a mask, the fact that we are able to be here together in one room instead of kind of sitting there at home twiddling our thumbs like we did for most of the last year, not knowing what was going on, this is pretty big progress. And so again, be aware of the rise and fall of the breath, be aware of the beating of the heart, be aware not of all the things you somehow need to add in to prove your spiritual power, but rather in the words, you know, paraphrase the words of from Walden, from Thoreau. He said, a man is rich in proportion to the things which he can afford to let alone. And I'm not saying don't create and don't live the amazing life, but what I'm saying is the addiction to it is the affirmation of lack, which is the exact opposite of living a holy life. And that includes, bless their hearts, all the ones on TV selling you their gold-plated Bibles that are gonna, you know, whatever. No offense. Bless your hearts. Okay. So thank you. Just allow yourself to be open today as you're walking around. Maybe take your shoes off if you're able to, or just go outside, sit in the garden. From what I understand, Bill's got an epic garden. Not that we've ever been invited over there. But I hear from other people. No kidding. And just be aware of when you walk outside, be aware of the beauty of the pollen that makes your eyes itch, or the, you know, the beautiful flowers, everything's starting to finally wake up. I think we're past the freezing stage. So again, every breath, be aware of the gratitude of that. And the more you can bring yourself into the gratitude to realize that your entire life is your prayer rather than just something set apart, the more that gratitude turns into grace, because it's the exact same thing. With that, I say Shlomo Amen, and thank you for being open. And thanks for coming to my birthday party. It's not a party, but anyway.